So I have this thing that I do. It's where I put my sourdough starter in the refrigerator and then forget about it completely for sometimes up to 9-10 months. So I realize this is just a part of my personality. It's just how I roll. I don't know if it's worth it to try to change that side of myself, but I have had some really incredible results from reviving these sorely neglected sourdough starters. And recently, I revived one that I was almost certain was completely too far gone. So I wanted to share some of my sourdough resurrection thoughts with you today, just in case you've ever done this, although I'm sure you would never forget about your starter as long as I do. I don't care if it's black. I don't care if it's dry. I don't care if it's been in the back of your refrigerator for almost a year. Odds are you can probably bring it back from the dead. So I wanted to share some of my bad sourdough parenting fixes with you today. Welcome to the Old Fashioned on Purpose podcast. This is a show where we talk about what we have left behind as we have raced towards progress as a society and how we can get the good pieces back and mix the best of the old ways with our modern world. So I'm your host, Jill Winger. I've been living this homesteading lifestyle, if you want to call it that. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I don't, but I've been living this way since around 2008 when my husband and I bought an old tumble-down farmstead out here on the Wyoming prairie. It was back before it was cool, back before homesteading was a thing on Instagram or Pinterest. I don't even think Instagram and Pinterest were really a thing yet. But anyway, I've been doing this a while and I love to teach these old-fashioned skills to people just like you because I see a lot of value in them, not just for the sourdough bread that we get or the homegrown tomatoes, but it does a lot of really good things for the deeper parts of us and our humanity as well. So today we get to have a little bit more of a practical topic. I've been kind of going back and forth. Every other episode, we'll do a practical topic with more of a how-to bend, and then we'll do one that's a little more high-level, addressing some trends I'm seeing in homesteading or some bigger, more heavy topics. But today we're getting practical. We're getting into the kitchen, and we're talking about sourdough, which is one of my favorite topics. It's also, I think, one of your favorite topics because whenever I talk sourdough, you guys really respond with a lot of excitement, whether it's a podcast episode or a blog post or a recipe or whatever. So this is going to be fun. Where do we want to start? I think I want to start by prefacing this with just this understanding. When you see someone like me creating things online or talking about different aspects of homesteading or whatever lifestyle we're discussing on our platforms, I want you to know that at least for me, I am not keeping all the balls in the air at once. And hopefully that makes you feel a little better because I think that it's really easy. No one's fault. It just happens where we see someone that, you know, from afar on social media and we make assumptions about how their life must be. And oftentimes, I know if thinking about myself, I always kind of assume that maybe they're more perfect than they are, or you start to compare yourself and go, oh, obviously they have it all together. And obviously they're doing all these things and I can't do half of them. So what's wrong with me? So it's really easy to get into that comparison trap. So I want you to know today, I don't always have a sourdough starter going. I don't always have a cow and milk. I am not always growing all the things. So just because I may have old blog posts talking about different topics, like doesn't mean I'm always keeping those balls in the air because let's face it, it's really hard to do all of that at one time unless this is the only thing you do. And as you know, I have a lot of other things I love besides just homesteading. So I have seasons where I do sourdough. Generally, summer is not one of them, which is kind of a bummer because sourdough tends to really love the heat of the summer months, at least here in Wyoming. I know some people will say they have more trouble with mold and stuff in the summer. We're dry here, so I don't have that issue. But when a kitchen is warm or a house is warm, sourdough really thrives. So it's kind of a bummer, but sourdough is not something I've traditionally kept in the summer because there's just too many moving parts of my life. There's gardening and all the events and all the things we do. So my rhythm is I'll usually start a starter or revive a starter late fall, keep it going through fall, winter, spring, and then come May, June, I'm like, I got to tap out. So I'll usually stick it in the refrigerator. So last year, what is this year? 2024. So last year, 2023 was a crazy year for us. And I explained some of that on previous episodes. We had the book launch. We had the charter school. You can find dedicated episodes about both of those topics and why they were such formidable projects. But I had more than normal, plus, you know, everything else we had running. And I was literally feeling like I was drowning. So the sourdough was the first thing to go. It was the first thing I'm like, yeah, this is a survival season. So Mr. Sourdough, off you go into the refrigerator. And then because that survival season extended longer than normal or longer than I had hoped, you know, I kind of rolled into last fall, kind of around the holidays. I was feeling pretty burned out, just kind of over everything, just for a lot of reasons. But I just didn't quite feel like myself, didn't quite feel like my normal, like, mood of just tackling everything at once. So I left the sourdough starter in the fridge for longer than normal. And then this beginning of 2024, as the fog has kind of cleared and I've taken some time to rest and recover from that burnout, I was getting the urge to bring it out of the refrigerator. So unfortunately, when I did that, I realized there was an issue. So not only had the starter been in there quite some time, I had also put the lid on kind of haphazardly initially, because I don't always screw the lid on tight. Sometimes I do. I don't know. I don't really hyperfixate on lid tightness. I just sometimes put it on there loosely. But it had fallen off in the refrigerator or had gotten knocked off halfway. So the starter had also dried, and I had this, it had it in this half gallon mason jar. That's my preferred vessel for sourdough starter. So I not only had the hooch, which is that black liquid on top of a starter, which is normal. It's not a bad thing. We're going to talk about that more in a minute. But I also had a couple inches of like rock hard concrete starter on top. And I didn't really realize that until I, you know, stuck my spoon in there and started to explore it. I'm like, ooh, this is new. I've never had this happen before. So I decided to see if it was salvageable. My hopes were low at that point. But hopefully, if you're listening to this, I'm telling you this today because surely yours can't be worse than mine. If you have a starter in the fridge right now, if you've been forgetting it, it can't be worse than that. I mean, this was definitely top two of the most neglected starters I have created. And I have done some serious neglect. Like, I may partially be considered an unfit sourdough parent at this point, but onward we go. So anyway, I had this blackened starter. I had a dry starter, but I still decided to salvage it. And now when I posted about this on Instagram, I got a couple questions. They're like, ew, why would you salvage it? Just throw it away and start over. Now, that's absolutely an option. As we've talked about on previous episodes, if you go back a couple seasons, you know, starting a brand new starter isn't rocket science. It's not impossible. I mean, it's pretty simple. It's flour, water, and time. You don't have to go buy a pre-made dried starter. I know a lot of people are selling those right now. It's really not necessary. It just isn't. You don't have to go use a bunch of weird ingredients. You can literally just start with whatever's in your pantry in terms of flour, and most water is going to work. The reason that I prefer to salvage a starter versus starting from scratch when possible is it just shortens the time frame a little bit. I find that if I'm starting from scratch, at least for me, I plan on about 2 weeks of feeding and care of that baby brand new starter before it's ready for me to use in breads where I need rise. You know, I could use it in pancakes or discard recipes, but to get that rise, I'm looking at least 2 weeks to really get it strong enough to function. It just takes time. And I wish I knew more of the science about what is happening in terms of the yeast and bacteria and where they get strengthened versus where they may not be strengthened and what that time frame does to that. I don't really understand all that, but I do know that a brand new baby starter is pretty inconsistent in raising my bread. So I know that if I can work with the existing established bacteria in a starter, even if it looks horrible, then I have a better chance of getting to the baking and the breads quicker. And that's why I chose to do this. So here I was with this very sad starter, and I decided to see what I could do. So first things first, I had to knock the dried portion off, which was quite a feat. Like I said, it was really tough. So I had to beat on it pretty good with a wooden spoon, kind of crack it, peel the big chunks of dried starter out, and then I put those in the chicken bucket. I discarded those. Now at the bottom, I ended up having a very thick, pasty consistency left over of the remaining starter. And it wasn't moldy. Nothing smelled rancid. Like, the smell was still kind of like a dried out sourdough starter. So those are kind of my deal breakers. If I do see a lot of mold, if I do see, or not see, if I smell something that smells like dirty socks, or it's just, you'll know when it's bad. Like, I don't have to explain it to you. Like, you'll just know. Your body will be like, this should not be consumed. That's when you toss it. But I didn't have either of those warning signs. And so I had this, but I had this thick paste. And so I pulled, I'd say, a couple tablespoons of that paste out. I put it in a fresh jar. I always do that when I'm start trying to revive a starter, just because jars get gross after a while and it's nice to knock all the bits, dried bits out. So put it in a brand new jar. And then I added some warm water and some more flour. And I did not actually measure. You can measure. I have directions for measuring on my blog. But honestly, most of the time when I'm feeding the starter, I just eyeball it. I just kind of developed a feel over the years of what I like it to be. I can kind of know when I have enough flour or not enough, too much water or not enough water. My goal is to get a thick pancake batter consistency. I would say there's nothing wrong with erring on the side of thickness. I mean, not that there's anything wrong with thinness either, but I found that if you really want to see the bubbles, which help you gauge readiness, thicker is better because it gives more oomph for that starter to rise in the jar, more like grip, for lack of a better word. So I go for a stiff pancake batter. And so I added just enough flour and water to create that. I didn't want to overpower the starter because I only had a few tablespoons of it. So I didn't go add cups of flour. I added probably, I don't know, quarter to a third cup of all-purpose flour, similar amount of water, stirred it together, kind of made a slurry, set it out on the counter to see what would happen. I figured it would take a couple days, but I was really, really pleasantly surprised when I started to see good bubble action within about 24 hours. And that's what you want to see, whether you're starting from scratch or you're trying to revive a starter, is you just want to see those bubbles. That means you, life is present. You still have a chance to bring it back from the dead. If you don't see bubbles after about 24 hours in this case, I wouldn't give up on it quite yet. I'd say, you know, if you don't see anything within 2 or 3 days, you're probably dead. But bubbles that early is a good sign. And so I waited 24 hours. I fed it again. I didn't discard that time. I just added more flour, more water, because I didn't have a lot of quantity to begin with. And then within 48 hours of me pulling that starter out of the fridge, I had a starter that was bubbling consistently. Like, it was growing up the sides of my jar. And so I continued to feed it for a few days, and I started using it, and I'm currently using it now. I used it last night, in fact, to make some bread. And so it was just cool to see how resilient those sourdough organisms are. I'm always impressed by that whenever I'm cooking slow food or working with real food, whether we're talking fermentation, lacto-fermentation, we're talking dairy. Like, it's just fascinating how we can work with nature and bacteria and microbes to accomplish things in the kitchens. I think that's just one of my favorite parts about cooking from scratch. And as I've learned how to become more familiar in using those pieces of nature in my cooking, rather than taking that modern mindset where everything needs to be sterile and dead, you know, when I'm looking at raw milk and the bacteria in cheese and the bacteria that works with me during fermentation, it's really cool. And they're really robust. And I don't fully understand all the science behind it. I've dabbled here and there. I find that those bits and pieces of information don't always stick in my brain like other things do. I'm just not wired like that. But I know enough to be dangerous, I will say that. And I'm always just so amazed at how it works. And so there is hope. If you have a starter in the back of your refrigerator, odds are you have a really good chance of saving it. A few warning signs, though. Like I said, there's a few things I watch for that are deal breakers. So the things that I would, if I see them, I will not try to save the starter, would be the mold, right? Now, I'm not talking like if you have a lid on there and there's a little bit of fuzz around the edge of the lid. That's different to me than mold that is permeating a starter or is down in the starter. That's a deal breaker. If there's a little mold at the top, I'm not too worried about it. I might just try to carefully extract some out of the jar without disturbing the mold and put it in a fresh vessel. But molds, you just don't want to deal with it. I actually honestly haven't had, I don't think, a single instance ever where I've had a starter mold, whether it was on my counter or in my refrigerator. Now, that being said, we're dry. We have 0% humidity here. And I know if you live in a more humid climate, mold is something you deal with more. So, like I said, I don't have a lot of experience with that. Unfortunately, people ask me about mold and I'm like, I got nothing because I just don't have experience with it. But that is something, if there was a lot of it. Another deal breaker for me is color. So like I said, black or gray or brown tint of either the starter or the liquid on top of the starter, totally fine. That is normal. That is a waste product of the sourdough process, of the bacteria consuming the sugars and everything in the flour, and then they produce that waste product. You may even see that liquid happening when it's on your counter and you're feeding it regularly and it's very active. And if you do start to see that, what usually that is telling us is you're not feeding it enough. Your starter is a little bit hungry. Doesn't mean you're starving, and it just means you may need to give it a little more food, more frequent feeding. And so obviously, if you have a dormant starter or a starter that became dormant in a refrigerator, it means we haven't fed it in a while, so we just see that waste product. You can pour off the black or gray liquid, or you can stir it back in. I've done either one. It's not going to hurt you. It's not going to ruin anything. It's not gross. It's just part of the deal. But pink or orange in coloration, that's when it means it's on its way past the point of no return. So I've saved them when they're a little teeny bit orangey pink, but if they get very orange or pink, it's usually pretty gross. Also, generally that color is accompanied by a really bad smell, like putrid smell. You will know when it is a bad smell. The black or gray liquid is usually like a little sour or a little tangy, or sometimes it'll be a stronger tang if it's sat a while and it's hungry, but it won't be unpleasant. Okay. Pink and orange is usually an unpleasant scent that comes with it. So those are my warning signs. Oh, back on the mold question, I did have a couple people ask me, because I documented this process with this exact starter that I'm telling you about today. I documented it in an Instagram reel if you want to see like pictures of it. I'm not exaggerating. It was rough, right? And they're like, well, how do you know that the black you saw in your jar wasn't mold? And I was thinking about how to answer that, because I don't have like a perfect 1, 2, 3 identification process. You just kind of know, right? You mold is round and fuzzy and bluish green, and sometimes, and you can just kind of tell the difference. The hooch or the waste product is it's not gonna have that fuzz, if that makes sense. Probably not very helpful, but that's kind of what I go by. So those are your warning signs. As long as it's black or gray, it smells just pleasantly sour or tangy, no mold, you're good to go. At least worth a try, right? And like the worst thing that can happen is you try to revive it and it doesn't work and you start over. We probably would have started over anyway. While we're on this topic, I think this is good to good time to discuss storage options for your sourdough, because I think that a lot of people know this now, but just by judging by some of the comments I got on that Instagram reel, I think that some people maybe don't realize how well a fridge works for long-term storage. You know, there's that belief that a sourdough starter is a little bit like a milk cow, that it needs, you know, babying twice a day, it needs care constantly, you can't go anywhere. And that's definitely not the case with sourdough. Most of you know, you can stick it in your refrigerator. If you just are tired of it, you need a break, you're going on vacation. It works really well. That cooling down slows down the bacteria. And so it just keeps them kind of in a constant state. They're not going to be needing that feeding very often. Another way that people will save or preserve a starter is by dehydration. Now, honestly, I haven't done this because I just haven't really needed to. But if you're worried about, you know, maybe someday accidentally killing a starter and you don't want to start from scratch, you can spread a starter out on a dehydrator tray, dehydrate it at a low temperature till all the moisture is gone. You maybe could do it in an oven if your oven goes really low, but I'd be careful because you don't want to heat it too far, because that's where we kill it. But you can then break your starter up in chunks and use that and reconstitute it, kind of like I did with the starter that I recently revived. So that's another option. That's usually when people are selling starters online. They're just dehydrating them at home and selling them, you know, on Etsy or whatever. There's also another method I'm going to dive into, and I will be documenting this in a blog post and probably here on the podcast as well. There's a method called the dry starter method is one name I've heard for it. It's not as popular as the wet method, but I'm seeing more and more people talk about it. I've been aware of that method for a while. I haven't tackled it for a couple reasons. Like, honestly, this what I call the wet method is what I'm doing now. So the reason I haven't tackled the dry starter method thus far is just because I kind of like the rhythm of the wet starter, the one where you're leaving it on your counter and you're feeding it every day. I like that it forces me to get creative and use it. It kind of holds me accountable. I make pancakes more often when it's there, and I get more creative using it in recipes to use up the discard. I know the discard can really stress some people out. So I would say if you hate the discard, if you feel like it's always hanging over you, maybe look into that dry method, which I will be exploring more here in a future episode. So stay tuned for that. I will do a in-depth report for you guys on wet versus dry and do some comparisons and such. So that should be fun. So anyway, that's my sourdough spiel. I think my best advice for anyone who wants to do more sourdough, who tried it and didn't like it, but you're still feeling the urge to give it another go, just remember it's so forgiving. You know, I think one of the downfalls with this rush of sourdough passion on the internet since COVID, I think it's wonderful, but there's also a lot of people complicating it to death and making it look really scary and overwhelming. And I always just remind myself that, you know, they had sourdough starters on the Oregon Trail wagon trains. So I figure if they can keep it going, bumping across the prairie in basically a survival situation without scales and certain types of flour and not ideal temperatures, then, you know, it's probably a lot more resilient than we give it credit for. So don't overcomplicate it. Do the best you can. Figure out a method that works for you. I mean, you might even find a new interval of feeding or a new method that you pioneer and figure out how to make it work into your schedule, because there's really no set in stone rules for this. I will confess, like, there are times when I leave it out on my counter and I forget to feed it for a day or two, and it will bounce back. It's not ideal, but it bounces back. There's times when, you know, like I said, I leave it in the fridge for 8 months. There's times when I just don't use it like I should use it. I maybe feed it improper ratios. It just is very forgiving. So take heart. If you've gotten bucked off the sourdough horse, get back on, give it another try. And I hope this was helpful. I hope this gives you a little bit of inspiration to go dig into the recesses of your refrigerator, find that old starter, and see if you can give it a little bit of sourdough CPR. And for those of you who are looking for some more sourdough tips and tricks from me, if you like my non-fancy, no-frills approach to sourdough, I created a little ebook, kind of a little PDF thing last year, and we are offering that to you for free. You don't have to pay for it. If you want to go check it out, I will drop the link for that. You just have to give us your email and then we'll email you the link for the ebook. We'll put that down in the show notes for you to have a look. And hopefully that sets you on your way to some good sourdough adventures this spring. So that's all I have for you today, friends. Thanks for listening. And I will chat with you next time on the next episode of Old Fashioned on Purpose.